We're going to talk about Kobe a lot on the show. I mean, it was Kobe was such a tremendous athlete on the court, and even more so off the court. He was just amazing presence, like wherever he was. I mean, just such a captivating athlete.
Right. And something special I think about Kobe is that when, like, America was introduced to Kobe, Kobe was 17. So Kobe didn't get a chance to grow up organically. He didn't go to college and, like, screw up, like, go to frat parties or anything. Like, he had to be on his P's and Q's with professional athletes day in and day out when he's 18, 19, 20 years old. And I think that's just something so special about Kobe, that he grew up in the spotlight and turned in from the first ever guard drafted directly out of high school into one of the greatest players to ever touch a basketball court. And even after he retired, he won an Oscar. Like, he didn't do things halfway, and I think that's something we can all take from him, is that if it's worth doing, it's worth overdoing, and it's worth following that Mamba mentality.
Absolutely. Just to add to that, man, like, I agree completely what you're saying. Like, Kobe, not just basketball, but, like, he touched so many lives just off the court, you know, with his attitude towards life and, like, just the sheer desire to, like, anything that he learned, he wanted to be the best at it. Like, I remember this, somebody brought it up, like, on the radio or on an article. He's like, he wanted to learn from, like, J.K. Rowling, like, the famous Harry Potter author, you know, about, yeah, I want to learn how to write creatively and freely and, like, become, like, a literature writer. And, you know, when he did that, when he sets his mind to something, you know, he's going to do it. He might end up becoming better than J.K. Rowling. I mean, is that too much of a stretch? Right. You know what I mean? And it's like, That's what we should take away from, you know, his legacy, is that, you know, anything he set his mind to, that he was going to accomplish it, no matter the barriers in front of him or anything. I mean, you know, he was going to give it his all, give it 100%, and do whatever it took, you know, to complete it and, like, become the best at it. And I think that's, to me, that sums up the Mamba mentality, like, in its purest form. So
right. And, like, we all love to talk about what he did on the court, and I think off the court is just as special. But while we're talking about him on the court, averaged 25 points per game for his entire career, 18 All-Star game appearances, 5 titles, 2 NBA Finals MVPs, 1 regular season MVP. And a lot of people have him as the greatest player to ever live. And if they don't, it's Michael Jordan or LeBron. And Kobe's always in that top 2 or top 3 kind of discussion. And that's really special.
Yeah, there's no question about it. He's definitely, like, top 10 of all time, I would say. You know, you're going to have people out there like, oh, that's crazy, you know. Cause back in my day, you know, when the NBA was the NBA, you know, like the 80s, you had those classic, you know, NBA Finals matchups with, like, the Lakers and the Celtics that really revolutionized the NBA and made it what it is today. And, yeah, I mean, that also reminds me of the late, you know, wonderful David Stern, the commissioner, that just passed away as well. So just to pay a little tribute to him, you know, he really started and really made what the NBA is today. So, I mean, it wouldn't be that global phenomenon without him, and really Kobe as well, because Kobe is just, when I think about the NBA, like, he's one of those global icons that, you know, the NBA, you know, they churn out all these athletes. And, like, Kobe, like, just bounced off the top of my head whenever I think of, like, a global icon from the NBA. And, like, he's definitely one of those players. And, you know, he was big in China. He was big in Indonesia. Like, he was big in, like, Siberia, dude. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just, he's one of those players, like, those transcending players. And, you know, when we heard the news, it was, we took it really hard. I remember taking it really hard. Like, I didn't believe it at first. I just couldn't believe it, man.
Yeah, I saw it in one of my coworkers posted a link to it, and I was thinking, oh, it's TMZ. They're probably dragging up some mud on Kobe. And then I got a message in a group chat that I'm in, and it's like, Kobe died. And I'm like, nah, Kobe no, there's no way Kobe died. And it's like, Kobe Bryant is dead. And it's so jarring to me. And I was watching a TV show the other day, and one of the analysts said, Kobe Bryant is too big to die. And I echo that sentiment that he wasn't just a basketball player. He was an ambassador for all sports, whether particularly basketball, but he was a huge soccer fan. AC Milan gave him a lovely tribute over the weekend. And it's like Kobe is so ingrained in my like love of sports, and I'm sure Brian's love of sports as well. And it's just incredible. And back to David Stern for a second. Before he became commissioner, the NBA, when the NBA would televise the NBA Finals, it would be on tape delay. And Stern's early years as commissioner were some of the roughest years with the NBA's love of cocaine and tape delay for the biggest games of the season. And then you get Magic, then you get Larry Bird, David Stern, and the NBA starts growing in popularity. You have some of the best years in the NBA, the mid-80s, then you have the Jordan Bulls in the 90s, and now you have modern basketball, and everyone's so excited to watch, even though this year ratings are a little bit down because the Warriors fell off.
Yeah, I mean, we all know why the ratings are down, because besides the Warriors falling off, it's like everyone is just like so anticipating like Zion's like his debut and stuff, and I think that really had a big part in it, since like they showed the Pelicans on so many games without Zion. It's like people were like getting frustrated. It's like their ratings just took a big spike down, and it's like that definitely contributed to it. And like just going back to Kobe, man, I thought it was just really well done what the teams all around the association did in paying homage to Kobe and his daughter. The Nets, oh man, this was like the toughest for me just to watch it. I'm sorry, I'm getting a little emotional right now. This is really hard. Courtside, they left two courtside seats with two roses on each on seat, and I thought that was really cool that they did that. And you know, all the players got emotional, and that was just really cool how they did that. And you know, every other team had their own like kind of like you know, taste to it. They put their own little sauce, if you may,
right.
On the little homage that they would do. So like every team, they would take a 24 shot clock violation in honor of 24, and they would take a 8-second backcourt violation as well. And I thought that was really cool. I mean, how else could you like pay tribute to him? That was, you know, very creative. You know, all the other teams would follow that. But yet again, you know, Miami Heat paid tribute to him. They showed a tribute video on the big Jumbotron, as well as the Detroit Pistons. They all came out like a black number 24 in the back, which was really cool. So, I mean, yeah, I just like how they went about those festivities just to honor him. And we'll see in the All-Star game as well, and like I'm sure further down the season.
And I think one of the biggest tributes to Kobe was Mark Cuban coming out and saying that 24 will never be worn by another Dallas Maverick. And as far as I know, the only other jersey retirement of a player that did not play for that specific franchise is Michael Jordan with the Heat. And I think that's just a touching thing that Cuban immediately is like, no Maverick's ever going to wear 24 again. We're retiring it because of Kobe. And I've heard rumors that people want the NBA to retire 8 or 24 or both universally, similar to what the NHL did with 99 in hockey, or what Major League Baseball did with 42 and Jackie Robinson. So I don't know how practical that is to get 8 and or 24 retired, but I think that would be a fitting tribute to Kobe.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I agree. I mean, it just seems like now, almost like how the Lakers, it seems like they're just destined now. Like, they're definitely going to be, like, you know, so amped up and, like, even more motivated to win a championship, you know, just to honor them. But, like, of course, you know, we don't want to put all that pressure on them. Like, that's incredible pressure just to do it for, like, someone that just, a legend of the organization that just passed away. I mean, but, I mean, hey, it'd be great to see that, like, the Lakers make to the finals and winning. You know, I would like that, you know. It'd definitely be deserving, you know, in honor of him. I would just like to see LeBron at the end, like, yeah, it's for Kobe. And that'd be really cool. I mean, but also what I like to touch on, which I'm going to bring a little Illuminati into this. You know, this is a little strange for me, you know, because, like, all here's right. The thing. the Lakers are playing in Philadelphia, right?
Right.
This is the game right before, you know, unfortunately, Kobe's death and all the other passengers that perished. That night, I just thought how odd it was that LeBron James passes Kobe Bryant on the all-time scoring list, becomes third all-time. Meanwhile, he's wearing a Laker jersey. He did this wearing a Laker jersey and did it against the Sixers in the hometown of Kobe Bean Bryant. I mean, how strange is that? And then what happens the next day? Kobe Bryant passes away, sadly. I mean, that's just the weirdest thing. Like, how do you explain that?
I think one more thing to note is that Kobe's last tweet was about LeBron and, like, hashtag the scoring title or a scoring record. And I think we do tend to grasp at straws when we are emotionally unstable, but that was a lot of crazy things that happened. I certainly have my tinfoil cap on here and Illuminati triangles over my eyes because it's bizarre with Kobe's connection to Philadelphia and Lower Merion High School and LeBron, like, passing Kobe while playing for Kobe's team. And one more tribute that I wanted to mention was Andrew Wiggins of the Minnesota Timberwolves set the game ball on the free throw line that Kobe connected on his free throw to overtake Michael Jordan on the scoring list to be third all time. And I thought that was one of the more poignant player tributes. And of course, other players have changed their numbers. Spencer Dinwiddie changed his number from 8 to 26. A player for the Kings, I think the Kings, changed his number from 24 to 81 in honor of Kobe. And I'm sure more players will continue to abandon 8 and abandon 24 out of respect for what Kobe Bryant did to basketball.
Absolutely. Just to add to this, not really like Illuminati, but like it's just crazy how it got brought up to my attention. It's like, you know, on my way to work, I remember I was listening to like a podcast on like, you know, the legacy like Kobe Bryant. Then all of a sudden, you know, the minute I turn it on, you know, I'm driving, and then all of a sudden, I look to my right, and I see Bryant Avenue. Like, how do you... just blows my mind, man. Like, that's insane. Like, how do you explain that? Just, I mean, it can't be Illuminati. Like, we all love to play like Illuminati, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's just one of those crazy, you know, supernatural, whatever you want to call it, kind of ordeals that just happens, right. And like you have no answer to explain it. One of, you know, just weird mysteries in life. It just happens out of nowhere. I mean, maybe it's like a message from the universe or something. I mean, I don't know, man.
I think yesterday I was ordering some food for dinner, right? And my total was 8:24, and I'm like, I want to get that. I want to get that receipt, and then I realized, oh, I have a meal plan, so it doesn't actually charge me $8.24. So that was really sad.
Whoa!
So that was kind of scary, but
yeah, I mean, like I said, man, I guess he's watching all of us. I mean, you know, I guess all the lives that he touched. Maybe we're all getting like a same kind of encrypted message like that,
right?
You know,
and I think one thing, there are some people that feel like they want to take shots at other people for mourning celebrity deaths. And I think in this case, Kobe means so much to a generation that in terms of like popular culture, it's very similar to the death of Whitney Houston or the death of Michael Jackson. Like these athletes or these singers are not just athletes or singers. They are inspiration for millions upon millions upon millions, even billions of people. And I know Kobe was not necessarily the top of the most impactful sports deaths in my life for me, but Kobe impacted certainly almost everyone in the Los Angeles area. And he's the reason why so many NBA players now play the way they do, like Jason Tatum, or he's like Trae Young, Kobe Bryant's daughter Gigi, who also perished. Her favorite player was Trae Young, and Trae had a beautiful tribute to Gigi and Kobe during the Wizards Hawks game. And it's as tough as it is, and these athletes and celebrities, they feel integral to like our existence. Like, I wouldn't be the same person if Kobe Bryant didn't play 20 years in the NBA. Yeah. And as trivial as that sounds, it's true, because he bestowed upon us things like the Mamba mentality and this grit and this desire to win in every situation that not every athlete has, not every celebrity has that kind of sway.
Exactly, man, I agree. And just to touch back on, like, you know, very popular, well, I don't want to say popular, but, like, you know, very notable, like, celebrity deaths. The one that, like, probably impacted me the most, and it's strange because I didn't grow up during his time, you know what I mean? But I would say, like, Muhammad Ali. Like, that was huge, man.
Right, right.
Because, like, you know, I remember that day exactly, like, so vividly. You know, I'm sitting, and I'm sitting there with my dad, and, like, we hear that, you know, Muhammad Ali passed away, and, like, just, like, just crazy, like, I had this, like, I don't know how to describe it, this, like, this wave of emotion that just, like, went down my body, you know, it felt like my body just, like, hovered up, I mean, I feel like I was just levitating or something, and, like, all of a sudden, you know, I just broke down, started crying, like, I couldn't believe it, I mean, because this guy, just the impact that he had, not only on the sport of boxing, but, like, on society, on, like, you know, race issues and all that stuff, you know, he fought for people that were being, you know, disenfranchised and marginalized for so long. And a perfect example of his, like, civil rights protest was he refused to go into Vietnam, and then he was arrested. And then after that, you know, he was able to get bail or something. And then, but just, like, such an incredible figure, you know, that will live on forever, just like, because, you know, legends never die. I mean, we all know that.
Like, yeah, The Sandlot.
Yeah.
Is it Heroes Are...
Heroes Are Never... I think it's like Heroes may Die? Or no. Man, I can't remember. It's like Heroes may Die, but Legends Live Forever or something?
Yeah, so Heroes Die, but Legends Live Forever.
Yeah, I was close. Yeah, definitely. But yeah, man, Muhammad Ali, for me, he impacted me a lot. He's just one of those figures. Like I said, like, I didn't grow up during his time, but, like, you know, everything that he stood for, his messages, everything that he fought for in his life, for the betterment of his people, I mean, that was very inspiring. And the fact that he did this while, like, being ingrained in a, you know, a combat sport, I mean, such a towering figure.
Yeah,
and, like, all time.
If one of his opponents didn't like what he said, you don't have to, like, yell at him. You can punch him in the mouth and uppercut him and knock him out. And I think with Ali in particular, it's a very bold. It's always bold to make a public statement, but when you can have the repercussions like he can have, when people can just pummel him and they're paid to pummel him, that's a lot of respect for me. And I think. Ali's up there in most impactful sports deaths for me, but I always have to jump to Stuart Scott, the late, great Stuart Scott from ESPN.
Oh, absolutely.
And he is one of the most influential people in my life. Family, friends, Stuart Scott's right up with them in terms of, like, I never met him. I would never have even dreamed of having the pleasure of meeting him, but it felt like he would be pulling in my direction if I knew him. And he was so strong and so charismatic and so influential to countless lives.
Yeah, and, like, now since you were mentioning, like, that's exactly how I felt about Kobe, because when he passed away, and, like, it just felt like I lost a relative, man, because, like, I've been following him for years, because he got drafted in 96 in June, and that was only 3 months, like, before I was born. And, like, I was basically, you know, it almost feels like we're, like, interconnected somehow. And for me, like, it just hit me so hard, man. It's just, it's so hard to put into words. I mean, for me, he was my Michael Jordan of, you know, my lifetime. And just to see him pass away and never being able to, like, see him play again or really. But I'm just, I'm just very grateful that I got to witness him, you know, play and ingrain this Mamba mentality in, like, so many lives around the world. I mean, I'll forever be grateful for that. know.
Yeah, I'm so thankful and grateful for all of the highlights. Like, last night I watched a 20-minute clip of Kobe Bryant highlights, and it's like, not only is he special enough to have a 20-minute clip of highlights, but it's so touching to know that every single day when he was with the Lakers, it was Mamba mentality or get out. And I heard a story that he bought Kobe's, like, the shoe for the rest of his team, and then they got blown out by the Clippers or the Timberwolves or something, and he took all the Kobe's back, and he called the players soft, and they would have to, like, earn the right to play in his shoes again.
Uh-huh.
So that was,
yeah, man, because, like, let's jump into, like, our favorite, like, Kobe moments of all time. I mean, there's just so many that pop into my mind. I would say first, like, one that really, like, just sticks out to me, like, I would say, like, it was one of my all-time favorites because he did against, like, my favorite team. Just, like, he hit this dagger against Miami Heat. I think it was a game in L.A. back in 2008, I believe. Yeah, 2008. I think in January. Something like that, yeah. And D-Wade was covering them. They were up by, like, Miami was up by 2. There was, like, 14 seconds left on the clock. And we all know who's getting the ball, right? So Kobe gets the ball, inbounds. He's dribbling, you know, he's doing some hezzies. And then all of a sudden, he does this crazy step-back fadeaway on D-Wade. Nails, I think it was a bank shot. A backboard shot. And boom, game winner for the win. Just broke my heart.
Yeah, so I'm going to jump back. 2006, when Kobe was mad at the world destroying everybody, but it's not his 81-point game. He had a game against the Dallas Mavericks in December, and he just decided casually to score 62 points in three quarters. And that, for those that aren't good at math, is a higher pace than what he scored in the 81-point game. So he outscored the entire Mavericks through three quarters. And then didn't play the fourth quarter. 62 points in 32 minutes of action.
Mind-boggling to me how one player, like a one-man wrecking crew, could just outscore an entire team of 12 players. I mean, that's absolutely mind-boggling. Like,
and I think the crazy thing about it, it wasn't like a terrible Mavs team. Like, the Mavs haven't been terrible in my lifetime, outside of maybe 2 years ago.
Yeah.
But this was a future Western Conference champion Mavericks team.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, prime Dirk.
Yeah.
Like, all the...
They had Jason Terry. I mean, even Jason Kidd, I think?
I think that was a little bit before
Kidd.
But definitely, like, Jet, Dirk Nowitzki. Yeah. Like, a high-quality Mavs team that won 67 games the next year. And Kobe's, like, dumping on them.
Yeah, you know? I mean, that's... Dude, mama mentality, man.
Yeah, 62 points.
This guy did not care who he was playing. He's never intimidated by anyone, man. Like, he just laid his mark and his foundation on every single game. Never left anything on the court. I mean, he was going to dominate and just take over the game whenever he needed to. Didn't matter. Didn't care. Well, I'm sure he cared about what the coach's inputs were at times. But, like,
sometimes.
Sometimes.
If it's Phil Jackson, maybe.
Maybe, yeah. That's a hard maybe. Even Phil Jackson? Yeah. Absolutely,
maybe. Greatest coach in the history of the sport? Your opinion doesn't matter. Kobe Bryant.
Exactly. I'm Kobe. I don't care if you coach Michael Jordan, okay? I'm sure he didn't care about your opinion either. I'm going to be like Mike.
Yeah.
And which he was like Mike, man. Yeah. I mean... He's the closest thing we will ever see to Michael Jordan,
right?
In my opinion.
Right. I think everything from the grace to the maybe not raw athleticism, I think Jordan beats him out in terms of just pure athletic talent.
Oh, absolutely.
But it's you can put their games side by side. And like if you like blurred the jerseys, blurred like the body figures, it's the same play. It's the same step back jumper absolutely. From the elbow. And it's incredible to watch how Kobe was able to pick pieces and little Dr. J here, Michael Jordan here. And even when Jordan was in the league, and I think Kobe and Jordan played 11 times, Kobe was using Jordan's moves to get buckets on Jordan. And one of the lasting impacts for me is one of Jordan's final games with the Wizards, they played the Lakers, and Kobe came out and dropped 51.
Yeah, man. You see, there's a reason they say mimicry is the greatest form of flattery. I mean, this guy literally copied like every single aspect of his game from Michael Jordan. Like, literally just about every single aspect. I mean, I think we could all agree about that. I mean, from the step back, the fadeaway, you know, the hezzy moves. Like, these crazy, he's in the air for like 5 seconds and does like a reverse layup, like behind the backboard, you know what I mean? Like, those are Jordan-esque moves. I mean, he's definitely like my Michael Jordan. He will always be my Michael Jordan. Like, no questions asked. Like, fight me. Doesn't matter. Okay, right, he was Michael Jordan of our era.
And I think one little side note. So a few years ago, the Lakers played on Christmas. And the next day, there was a tweet that surfaced that people drove across the state of California to fight each other about their opinions of Kobe. How many athletes do you know that can get grown men to actually square up? And one more moment for Kobe is when Matt Barnes, playing for the Magic, just pretended to throw the ball in Kobe's face. Kobe didn't flinch. And Matt Barnes, like, act as, like, big-time tough guy. Like, he would probably fight just about anyone on this planet. And he, like, pretends to chuck the ball at Kobe's face, and Kobe just stares daggers at him. Like, that's absolute respect.
Oh, absolutely, dude. And, like, what really the hardest thing for me to take out of all this is, like, the people that really knew him close, you know, besides, like, his wife and everyone that were really affected. I mean, I also want to, like, talk about, like, the players that, like, knew him, that played with him, the coaches, I mean, all, like, these members of, like, the Lakers organization, you know, going all the way down to, like, the janitor, you know what I mean? Like, these people that have established, like, you know, very close bonds with him over the years. You know, guys like LeBron, D. Wade, T-Mac, man, Tracy McGrady, you know what I mean? And, like, even Shaquille O'Neal, the biggest one for me. Like, they were, like, brothers. And, you know, the media, they really, like, you know how the media is, man. Like, they love to, like, spin all these stories about this beef, this so-called beef with, like, Shaq and Kobe. I know they made some diss records about each other, but the media just took it and just, like, turned it into a whole different thing and, like, just really blew it out of proportion. And that was unfortunate.
And I think at the end of the day, Shaq and Kobe had their differences on and off the court, yeah, but they truly respected each other. Yeah. Eventually, at the end of Shaq's career, at least, because Kobe was outspoken that Shaq didn't have the work ethic that Kobe wanted.
Yeah.
And as bad as that seems in the moment, they still won championships together, and they had a mutual respect that, yeah, Shaq might not work as hard as I do, but really no one does. But Shaq's also good enough at basketball to be the number one option on a team with Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, and just to add to that, man, like, I remember Kobe would say constantly, you know, people ask him questions, so, you know, how'd you feel about playing with Shaq? He'd always say, look, man, this guy was a freak of nature. I mean, he could have been the greatest of all time if he had my work ethic.
Totally agree with that.
I agree with that, too.
100% agree that Shaq would be the greatest player to ever live by leaps and bounds if he had the legendary work ethic of a Jordan or a Kobe.
Absolutely. I completely 100% agree with that assessment of Kobe Bryant.
And even without, like, the legendary work ethic, Shaq's still a top 10, top 12 player of all time. Still has 4 championship rings, 3 finals MVPs.
Oh, absolutely.
Should have been the unanimous MVP in 2000.
Yeah. Him and Kobe, like, they're definitely top 10, without question. There's no doubt about it. I mean, what a duo. I can't think of, like, a more dominant duo. I mean, people want to say, like, LeBron, Anthony Davis, but, like, it's just two different eras, man. Like, LeBron, Anthony Davis are playing in, like, you know, just, like, a different NBA. Like, a softer league, man. Like, I hate to call these players out, but, like, the league has really changed into something that, like, we're just not accustomed to, man.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the three-point shooting, especially with the Warriors. And I remember after they won the 2015 finals, they gifted Charles Barkley a T-shirt that said, like, teams that can shoot threes, championships 1, Charles Barkley championships 0. And it's just,
that's pretty funny.
And it's just, like, I guess the game's really changed, and we can argue about if it changed for the better or changed for the worse, but it's just a different game than it was early earlier in its history, even in the 90s and early 2000s.
Oh, absolutely, dude. That's why, like, I just feel like these MJ, LeBron James comparisons are just so ridiculous, man. Like, just stop. Just stop, please. Right. It's just like, I mean, you can't compare one player for one era where the league was just so different. You just had, like, these hardcore guys. The league was so much tougher. And, like, it's just more physical back then in, like, in MJ's era. In today's era, LeBron's era, man, it's just like, nah, man, everyone just wants to shoot threes. You know what I mean?
And I think you can actually take that two ways and say, like, maybe the game in the 80s and early 90s was more physical, but I think now you have better athletes. So even if the, like, choke slamming or clotheslining people and the over-the-top flagrant fouls are no longer a thing, these guys are still going out there with, like, it's not mailman and farmers anymore. It's, like, toned athletes who have spent their entire lives, like, improving at basketball and basketball only, rather than, like, guys that were multi-sport guys like Danny Ainge in the 80s.
Exactly, man. I mean, these guys, you know, they were brought up differently, like, back then. Like, they just had this different mentality. You know, it just seems like in today's game, you just have players that, like, it's almost like, you know, I don't want to question any of their work ethics. I mean, they're professional athletes, like, at the end of the day. I mean, I'm sure they know what they're doing, but, you know, like, because, like, we live in, like, the social media-driven world now, and, like, it's just changed a lot of things, not just in basketball, but just in society in general. And I think that plays definitely a big factor in, like, the way these players approach the game now, I would say.
And I definitely think that to be, like, any kind of athlete, you have to have a work ethic that's a cut above. And if you're, like, I talked about how Kobe and MJ were almost identical in every way, but MJ is a better athlete. Mm-hmm. Well, Kobe has to compensate for that with a little bit extra hard work here and there. More time in the weight room. Yep, he'll do that. More jumpers. Yep. And I think that's just a testament to how great Kobe was, that he said he knew that he wasn't the most athletically gifted, even though his athleticism is like the 99th percentile. He knew that he's not 100th percentile, but he needs to be 100th percentile at every other aspect of the game. And at the end of the day, you could probably say he was.
Absolutely. And just to take from that, just to really like conclude this tribute to the great Kobe Bryant and his daughter, and all the people that were, unfortunately, that perished in the helicopter crash in Calabasas. The one thing that I will take from Kobe and what he'll be remembered for really is just, he was never the biggest. He was never the fastest. He was never the strongest. He was never the tallest. But it didn't matter to him, man. Like, he made up for all of that with, like, his heart, you know what I mean? He had the heart of a lion. And, like, that to me, and then just, like, this incredible desire to become great at something. And no matter the odds or what people tell you, all these distractions, like, he did it, man. You know? Like, he did it. And it didn't matter. Like, that's the thing that I'll take away from all this. It's just, we want him to be remembered, you know, for what he did on and off the court. And it was just, he just led this incredible legacy. So yeah, just want to say my last, you know, pay my respects to Kobe and the families that were lost in the accident. You know, rest in peace. And you guys will always be in our memory.
So, thank you, Kobe, for all the memories, for all the Mike Breen bangs, and for all the championships.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Kobe. God bless you. And you'll never die in our hearts, that's for sure.
So one thing about Kobe is that he didn't play in college, right? And of course we go to Arizona, and the Arizona basketball team's been a little shaky of late. After a hot start, lots of wins at home, had a early season loss to Gonzaga in December, and now they've entered Pac-12 play, and it's been a little shaky.
Oh, so yeah.
What do you make of that?
You know, it's shaky, definitely would be the right word. I mean, really surprised, you know, just the expectations of this team coming into the season. I mean, they had, you know, this crazy freshman class coming in, Josh Green and, like, you know, freaking YouTube sensation Nico Mannion. You know what I mean? It's like, we had all these big expectations, and perhaps that's probably why we find ourselves a little disappointed, but yet again, like, they're still freshmen.
You know what I mean?
It's like, we can't lay this big burden on them. It's like, it would be a little unfair, you know what I mean? And, like, this is definitely, I would say, not one of my best Arizona teams, a recent memory. Of course, you know, they had some suspensions earlier in the year, and for that, you know, they're losing some talent. But, you know, this is still a decent team. Came close to beating Gonzaga out of all teams.
That was a terrific game.
Very great game. Lost a heartbreaker at Oregon. Very close game. I think it was final score 64-63, I believe, overtime. I think that's right. Yeah, something like that. I know they lost by 1 point. It was, in the 60s.
And I do think that a lot of what we're saying is maybe a little overzealous. Because they're still going to make the tournament.
Oh, absolutely.
And if they don't make the tournament, no, that would be a catastrophe.
But oh, yeah.
Right now,
that would be the biggest, like, sports story in Tucson of the year, for sure.
Right now, Joe Lunardi has Arizona as an 8 seed. And I think that's fair.
That's fair, yeah.
They just recently fell out of the top 25 with the heartbreaking loss to Arizona State in Tempe. And it's – Arizona is maybe not one of the biggest blue bloods like a Kentucky, North Carolina, or a Duke. But they are a perennial powerhouse, especially in the Pac-12.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think being 3-3 in conference early in the conference season is a little worrisome. But Arizona has plenty of talent to turn it around and plenty of time to turn it around because it's only January.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's only January. Like, there's no time to panic right now. Like, they can still right the ship. I mean, 13-6, that's a formidable record. I mean, it's a young team. We can understand that. I mean, we didn't think they were going to be, like, you know, at Baylor's pace right now, like 21-1?
Yeah.
Or San Diego
State.
Yeah. I mean, we weren't expecting that. I mean, I didn't think they'd only have 13 wins at this point in the season. But, you know, I think they'll get it together. There's no panic in me. I'm sure that's with all Tucsonians. I mean, they can definitely get it together. They have some games coming up against, like, a USC. I think they're playing – who else do they have on that schedule? I know they got USC for sure. Because USC is not a bad team. That's another team that could possibly get in some trouble.
This weekend, the Wildcats take a trip up to Washington to play the Huskies
and the Cougars. Easy. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's always a tough trip.
Always a tough trip up to Washington, man.
And then they return home to play USC, UCLA, travel on the road to Cal, Stanford, and then return home for the Oregon and Oregon State matchups. Of course, Oregon's one of the best teams in the country, so that's going to be a tough matchup. But Arizona's only lost once to the McHale Center, so...
Exactly. So their odds of winning that game are exponentially high.
Right, right.
Especially since they lost by only 1 point, like, in overtime at Oregon. So, yeah, I'm feeling confident about that game. I think we can get back one little revenge game against Oregon.
And I think one special thing with this team is that they might only be 13-6 now, but as long as they make the tournament, you have tons of talent on this roster.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you have Zeke Nagy, Nico Mannion, and these guys, I don't want to call it out and say, oh, they're going to win the national title.
Oh, absolutely. No,
but they certainly have the talent to maybe beat let's say they end up being an 8 or a 9 seed. They have the talent to beat the other 8 or the 9 seed. And you can beat the 1 seed. College basketball this year is incredibly bizarre.
It is.
Good as Baylor, Gonzaga, San Diego State are, top 5 teams are losing left and right, and you have one hot day, like Mannion gets hot from 3 or Josh Green hits a couple threes, and all of a sudden Arizona's sitting in the Sweet 16.
I feel like this team is just either like 1 or 2 games away of really figuring it out, man. And when they do that, look out. I think they could really like just really hit their stride at the right moment and then get hot once tournament play comes around. Even Pac-12 tournament, maybe they could win that. And then going into the March Madness with some momentum. I think if they really hit their stride at the right time, that's a dark horse for me, like Arizona for sure. I think they could give a lot of teams some trouble.
I think this year is just so weird. And a lot of other years, it's like the ones and the twos are going to be the good teams and the occasional three seed. But this year, March Madness is going to be as crazy as it's been in a long time. And I always think back to 2011 when there was no ones or two seeds left in the final. 2011 when no ones or two seeds were left in the Final Four. And you ended up with UConn and Kentucky when neither team was top 10 for most of the year. And I think you could have a repeat of that if a Baylor slips up, because Baylor doesn't have the greatest track record of winning big games.
No, they don't.
Gonzaga doesn't have a great track record of winning big games.
No, not even Gonzaga.
And then San Diego State, the Mountain West, I don't want to call them frauds because they're certainly not. And
absolutely not.
They're a fantastic team.
Yeah.
Definitely deserving of being undefeated.
Very formidable team. That's for sure.
Will likely be a one seed if they keep this pace up.
Absolutely.
But there's a reason Mountain West teams generally don't win the tournament. And
yeah, and that's crazy because we haven't heard of San Diego State hitting the radar ever since Kawhi left. You know what I mean? And like now since like they're back and all of a sudden like they're a team to be reckoned with.
Yeah,
they just came out of nowhere, man.
Phenomenal team.
And then look at UNC. Like, what happened to them, man? Like, very odd season. It's just one of those seasons, like, because like they just have this winning tradition, almost like Arizona. And basically, like, they just fallen off the cliff, man. I don't know, because they're one game below 500, I think, right now. UNC.
I think right now they're really struggling in conference. They're 3-6 in conference. They are. Back to 500 in all regular season play, but they are a long way away from being able to compete at an NIT level, I think.
Yeah.
They certainly need injuries to heal and heal quick if they want to have any shot at making the tournament.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you something. I think everybody has this on their minds, like, what's really contributing, do you think, to the woes of, like, Arizona's play on the road? Because they're so dominant at McHale. But it seems like they just can't figure out to play all four quarters on the road. Like, just, you know, trying to squeak out a win. I mean, it's a little mind-boggling. Like, perhaps it contributes to their youth. Maybe they're still trying to learn how to win. I know the road is so much tougher because you don't have your fans backing you up. Except for, like, you know, some of the fans that make trips out to the games, but
I think something about McHale is just energizing.
Yeah.
So even Gonzaga was the better team for 40 minutes.
It's a magical place, man.
Yeah. Gonzaga was the better team for 40 minutes. And Arizona believed that for about 37 and a half minutes. And then the last 2 minutes, Arizona decided, nah, we got these great fans. Let's go put on a show.
Yeah, man. We're at home. Like, we're supposed to be this dominant team.
Yeah, and it's just, it was magical to watch. Even Arizona didn't win that game, of course, but it was magical to watch. Like, all of the shots were falling. Everything was clicking on all cylinders. And this Arizona team is just wickedly talented. And it's just tough on the road sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And it's maybe not excusable to be 0-4 on the road right now in non-neutral site games.
Yeah.
But there's something to be said that Arizona was pretty good at neutral site games. And the tournament, of course, is all neutral site games. And so they wouldn't have to worry about going on the road.
Absolutely. And they wouldn't be at McHale either. But I think I like their chances better at neutral site games instead of just going to, like, the other teams, like, you know, home court.
Right,
so,
right.
I mean, but also, I think another thing that, like, contributes to their woes, it's that there's also the psychological factor. Perhaps it's like maybe they're, you know, they're this young team, they're getting in their heads too much, and just the stimulus of playing in, like, on the road, you know, everyone's calling you all these things, you know, people are getting into your heads. I think that also leads to it. You know, these young kids are still trying to learn how to deal with that.
I mean, yeah, if you look in the crowd and you see 18 and 19-year-olds waving balloons around,
yeah,
that's a little off-putting, especially if you didn't go to the biggest high school.
Yeah, right, plus, like, everyone's shouting out all these profanities at you. I mean, you know, just, again, like, these are college kids, man. Like, they're not, you know, they're still maturing and becoming, like, you know, responsible young adults. And, like, you get all these distractions. Like, we're in college, right? Like, we know all this, like, temptations, all these distractions that, like, surround us. I mean,
yeah, and at the end of the day,
it's understandable.
Yeah, at the end of the day, they're students as well. So they have to balance
absolutely
course load. Like, if they have a Spanish exam in the morning. Like, they got to worry about that too. So I think it's admirable to watch student athletes go balls to the wall every day.
Absolutely, man. And again, I'm not too worried about Arizona. I'm not going to make a bold prediction and say, oh yeah, they're going to go all the way this year. I mean, it doesn't seem, I don't get that feeling with this team, but who knows, man? Like, we haven't said this in a long time, but who would have thought that Arizona could be that dark horse and possible Cinderella team?
Yeah.
And make it to, like, a magical Final Four run. That would be something, man, to see.
And I certainly think there's the talent there. Like, Nico Mannion should be a top 10 pick in the draft. And Zeke Nagy is absolutely incredible.
Absolutely, man. Another thing that's incredible, and it's, you know, kind of brewing on the hot stove at the moment, is the MLB free agency.
Yes, sir, it is.
I mean, now we got the, you know, a recent report of the Cubs and the Rockies and potential talks. Hopefully that doesn't break down. You know, I'm a little biased. I'm a big Cubs fan. You know, I'd love to see a little swap there for Arenado.
For those that are out of the loop, the Cubs have thrown around the idea of trading Chris Bryant to the Rockies in return for Nolan Arenado. And while both Bryant and Arenado are stars of the game and, like, widely recognized as two of the best third basemen in the league.
Oh, absolutely.
I think Arenado is just a cut above. Like, you get, you're probably your best two third baseman in the National League.
Because he's just a more reliable hitter. Like, his strikeout numbers are way lower than Chris Bryant.
And I think one other thing is how good Nolan Arenado is defensively.
Oh, yeah, like, that's a big thing.
Platinum glove. Absolutely. Gold gloves. Like, he's, like, if Matt Chapman didn't exist, like, Nolan Arenado is the heir apparent to Brooks Robinson.
He'd be the elite third baseman of the league. There's no doubt about it. Like, he just has all the intangibles of a great third baseman, in my opinion. So, I mean, yeah, what else we got brewing in free agency? I mean, we got, it seems like the Cubs just want to, like, completely, like, blow up the house and, like, destroy everybody. But I don't think Theo has that in mind at the moment. It doesn't seem like it, because all I see is, like, Chris Bryant. So far,
the Cubs are in such an odd position because I think most people recognize they are way too talented to not have made the playoffs in 2019.
Absolutely, yeah.
And you have guys that are, like, consistently in the MVP race, like Javi Baez.
Exactly.
For my money, is the best middle infielder in baseball.
Oh, absolutely. The most exciting player in baseball.
Yeah, and it's like he and Frankie Lindor, it's like neck and neck right now.
They have that Puerto Rican connection, man.
It's just crazy to think that in, like, 2015, when the Cubs were dumped out of the NLCS by the Mets, like, okay, yeah, they're still young, they'll get there.
Yeah, they'll get there again. Then
they win the World Series in 2016, and since then, it's not a lot, and it's just bizarre for me.
I think it's just because the reason why that topic was even brought up and why they would, like, potentially blow up the entire clubhouse is because, like, they've just been really underperforming ever since they won that World Series. Because after they won that World Series, it became like, all right, it's either the Cubs or, like, you know, bust, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And, like, just they just put all these, like, incredible, like, pressure and expectations on the clubhouse. And, like, they just haven't been able to live up to it for one reason or another. I mean, they all wanted to put the blame on Joe Maddon. Unfortunately, it cost him his job. But I'm sure there are other factors into it, too. Because I know he's a phenomenal manager. He's one of the best in the league. And the Angels weren't stupid to pick him up. I mean, what a smart move on their part. There's no doubt about it.
Maddon has an incredible track record of winning. He took Tampa Bay from the doldrums of the AL East to the doorstep of a World Series ring. And, of course, he worked lots of magic with the Cubs, even though he probably left Aroldis Chapman a little too long in Game 7.
Oh, don't get me started on that. I feel like he overused him just a bit much in those playoffs.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, it's bad when Aroldis Chapman's only throwing 85-mile-per-hour sliders and he's not trying to hit triple digits.
Yeah, it's pretty bad when you're bringing him in a little too early, you know, the seventh inning or so. But, I mean, yet again, it's like, I wasn't too mad about that, because, like, I knew he was really, like, our only chance to really, like, go all the way. I knew he was, like, the missing piece, and, like, the Cubs got him, and I was like, I felt really good of our chances, and just so happened they won the World Series. I mean, an incredible moment for me, personally. That was unbelievable.
I think that's an incredible moment for any, like, sports fan.
Any big sports fan, yeah.
It, like, the Cubs are like the lovable losers.
Yeah.
107 years without a title, and then bang.
Bam.
2016 World Series champs, baby.
It's how everyone thought the world was going to end. I mean, if it wasn't 2012, it was definitely going to be 2016.
Right.
When the
right.
Cubs won it. I'm like, oh, God, here we go.
So there's some other third basemans that have been on the move that have moved while Brian and Arenado could be on the move. So which move do you think was more impactful for the future team? Anthony Rendon to the Angels or Josh Donaldson to the Twins?
I want to say Anthony Rendon to the Angels. Here's why. I think the Angels, they want to get to that because they're tired of losing, man, and just being mediocre.
Right.
And they want to just, like, get out of mediocrity. And they started that by hiring Madden. Now they're getting the free agents. The Angels know that the players love playing for Joe Madden. He's a very attractable guy, you know, very approachable. And so, you know, the players, all these, like, free agents, like, you know, they're attracted to that. And so he's just a very contagious person, Joe Madden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with just his personality and the way he handles things as a manager.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe not everyone agrees with it, but it seems to work. Look what he did with the Cubs.
Yeah.
Crying out loud.
I think the Angels could be really interesting this year. Of course, you have Mike Trout. You're shoo-in for MVP.
Yeah.
You have a lot of talented players on the roster. Adding Rendon, Andrelton Simmons, Albert Pujols is on the old side, but he can sometimes hit some home runs and draw some walks for you. And I don't think the Angels are in the worst position, especially if the Astros have any sort of slip. The Astros did get Dusty Baker, which should eliminate them from winning the World Series.
Yeah, and that's the thing, dude. I think the Angels are like, They're a team on the rise, that's for sure. Like, they're, I would say, two or three moves away from really competing for a World Series. They can shore up that bullpen and maybe get, like, a few more, you know, some strong arms in the rotation, starting rotation.
And I think the return of the pitching version of Shohei Ohtani could be an interesting little side note if he continues to produce.
So now he's not being used as a total utility player, like, pitching and hitting, just pitching.
Oh, no. So 2019, he only hit.
Oh, okay.
Because he had Tommy John surgery.
Oh, okay, that makes sense.
So 2018, he mixed some batting and some pitching. 2019 was only used as a hitter.
Only hitter, yeah.
And he had an above average on base, OPS.
OPS.
And even as a rookie, he had an OPS over 900. That's really good.
That's phenomenal, yeah.
Like, that's crazy stuff. And if he's in your lineup three or four times a week, giving you home run power, the ability to get on base at a high level, that's helpful. And then, every 5 days, you can turn him out as a starting pitcher. As a rookie, he had a 3.31 ERA, which is converted to ERA plus for ballpark factors. That's above average, and he could be really special.
Absolutely. You see, I agree with that. I mean, he could definitely be one of those players that, could be, you know, what people really would love to see, like, in baseball. Because I know not everyone, like, you know, is really big in baseball and all those things. It's kind of a lost sport in a way. But, he definitely boosts those ratings for sure for MLB. I mean, we know the ratings haven't been all there over the last, like, you know, like, 10 years or so. But, yeah, he can definitely be one of those guys, you know. I think Major League Baseball, they're getting all these, like, young, exciting prospects from, like, international levels. So that's something that's very exciting. But, you see, you touched on Dusty Baker. And, you know, that's a hot name right now. Because a little unfair to Dusty Baker, he's taking on this burden of, like, a team has just been accused of a big cheating scandal in Major League Baseball, something that we haven't heard of baseball since, like, the Pete Rose days, man, when he got accused for, he got accused for, like gambling on games, whatever, for fixing, well, not fixing, but, like,
just gambling, just betting
games.
Team.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So,
and I think Dusty Baker, whether it's true or not, has a reputation of being, like, maybe not a choke artist,
no,
but a lot of his teams are perennial, like, choke jobs. Like, the most stark example to me is the 2002 Giants.
Yeah.
That they had a 3-2 lead in the World Series and blew it.
2003 Cubs.
Yeah.
Yeah. The infamous, oh, God.
The Steve Bartman
incident. Steve Bartman incident. Oh, poor Steve Bartman.
And then you have with the Reds and the Nationals. He couldn't get out of the early rounds of the playoffs. Couldn't make it deep. And, he has a 540 career... a 532 career winning percentage in the regular season, but when it matters, he's only winning about 42% of the games, and it's just tough. And
yeah,
the Astros these last few years are World Series winner,
World Series,
lost in the ALCS, lost in the World Series, and they lost Gerrit Cole. The Astros could have not a down year, but I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't make it back to the World Series.
And that's the thing, man. You mentioned, Dusty Baker's track record of being, a so-called, choke artist. I wouldn't disagree with that. He's definitely had years where it just seems like he just can't get over that hurdle, of winning these big games and, important situations. And, for the Astros to hire him, it just speaks volumes because of, I feel like after this cheating scandal, in the midst of this cheating scandal, maybe it scared away these other big name managers from potentially getting hired and wanting that position with the Astros. So that's something to really think about. I mean, not saying Dusty Baker's a terrible manager or anything,
Yeah, Baker's
he's definitely above average. Oh yeah, absolutely.
And actually this season, at some point in the season, he will have enough wins to get the dubious distinction of being the winningest manager of all time to never win a World Series. Of course, if the Astros win the 2020 World Series, that stat gets thrown out the window. But he does have that looming over his head during the later parts of the season.
Absolutely. Let's change it up a bit. How about we make some further predictions going to the season? How do we think this season's going to play out in Major League Baseball? I know it's only January. We're not quite yet at spring training. Pitchers and catchers haven't reported yet.
Right.
It's not February yet. I don't know, let's just make some, little fun predictions of this crazy MLB season about to come up in the midst of this cheating scandal. That's going to be something, man.
All right. I'm ready to spew some hot takes.
All right, let's do it.
World Series winner will be the New York Yankees. And the the team they will dispatch quickly in 5 games. I want to say the Braves, but I think the Braves are the real choke artists. I think it's going to be the Dodgers. For the third time in 4 years. I think the Dodgers can get Mookie Betts.
Yeah.
And that Bellinger and Betts.
Dude, if they get Mookie Betts, it's over. I can definitely see the Dodgers representing the NL and the World Series if that happens. Even if they don't get Mookie Betts, I still see the Dodgers representing the NL.
Yeah, I think Washington's regardless. Taking a step back.
Yeah, for sure.
The NL Central's a mess.
Yeah.
Atlanta can't win in the playoffs.
Yeah. Forget about the Cubs. It's going to be the same old narrative like it has been for the last 3 years. I mean, they can't underperforming like crazy, not living up to expectations. So I don't expect anything big from them. It's going to be more of the same. But who do you think a potential dark horse that nobody's really keeping their eye on?
I hate to say Minnesota is a dark horse because
I could see Minnesota
because they had a tremendous season last year. But if they can avoid the Yankees.
Yeah.
They could maybe win something. I think Minnesota and Atlanta are really in the same boat here because they have the last 20 years they can't win in the playoffs. And, it sucks to see it if you're a Twins fan or a Braves fan. But, of course, they are on some radars. The Diamondbacks, I think there could be a little bias there because we're in Arizona. But the Diamondbacks maybe could get a run. They got
maybe.
Starling Marte.
They did.
But they did trade 2 of their top 10 prospects.
Yeah. You see, I'll definitely side with you for World Series winner. The Yankees, for sure, they're a very sexy pick. They got Gerrit Cole. This guy's dominant.
Although, he might take a step back now that he's not in Houston, I think. The pitching staff, coach rotation, or the coaching staff in Houston, tremendous.
Yeah, absolutely. And, the expectations are going to be put on him. I mean, this is for any athlete that plays for, a New York team. Such a big market. in terms of sports. Really in anything. Like, it's just New York, man. Yeah, like, it's just a different
Yankees,
feeling.
The Yankees are the pinnacle of sports. It's like either the Yankees or the Lakers. It's
absolutely.
Like one and two.
It's the standard that everybody like dreams of playing for.
Like the Yankees get compared to like the Manchester Uniteds and Barcelonas of the
absolutely.
World.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, hey, we're at the hour. That's going to do it for us today. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Just for the both of you. That's good.